Welcome to the Find Your Leadership Confidence Podcast with Vicki Nethling. You are about to discover impactful lessons that help you grow as an individual, grow your confidence, and find the positive and good within you, so you powerfully and authentically become the best version of yourself. Be sure you visit our website at www.findyourleadershipconfidence.com. While you're there, subscribe to us via your favorite network. Now tune in, get ready, and enjoy the journey of emerging as a leader of exception in the 21st century.
Welcome, everyone, to the Find Your Leadership Confidence podcast. I'm your host, Vicki Nethling, coming to you from Roswell, Georgia. The goal of this podcast is to bring topics and guests that will empower you to become that confident leader and take your business and your life to the next level. Today, I am very pleased to have with me as my guest, Danielle Hennis. And let me tell you a little bit about Danielle. She is the founder of Make It Memorable, a presentation consultant, graphic designer, and teacher. She uses her background in psychology and graphic design to help her clients take their complex ideas and turn them into powerful presentations, lessons, and visual stories. She specializes in designing memorable and influential slides that help the audience gain a deeper understanding of topic. She has worked with a wide range of clients, including North Carolina State University, RTI International, Pfizer, and WebMD. When Danielle isn't working with clients on their presentations, she's teaching graphic design at Wake Technology Community College. Today, I thought we would just talk a little bit, have a conversation about communicating your message effectively. Please join me in welcoming my guest, Danielle Hennis. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, Vicki. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to talk about this. I, you know, as a person who coaches on speaking and being more engaging, some PowerPoints and some presentations do drive me crazy. and we can talk some stories about what I've seen. But before we get started, tell everybody what part of the country you call home.
Yeah, I am in Durham, North Carolina, and that is where I've been for the past 5 years. So it's been great.
Awesome. So give us a little bit of about your journey that's brought you to this today, you know. Give us some insights.
Sure. Yeah. So I was working for a research organization before I started my own business. And a lot of times with research, you have a lot of very text heavy slides. You get that a lot in all presentations, but there's something particularly bad about like academic slides that tend to be very, very text heavy. And so we would get a lot of people who would come to the, I worked for, as a graphic designer, and they'd come to the creative service department and they'd say like, hey, we have this presentation that we're giving tomorrow, next week, typically very little notice, typically it's a couple of days. And can you can you jazz it up? Can you make it look pretty? Can you make it pop? And the thing is that like, yeah, you can make anything look pretty, right? Like the whole saying of you can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig, right? It's that still holds true that you can make it look nice, but that's not helping you convey the message. It's not helping you tell whatever content that you need to tell. It's not resonating with the audience.
Yeah.
So just because something looks nice doesn't mean it's going to actually work.
It's true.
So I went to my supervisor at the time and I was like, you know, we've been getting a lot of requests like this, and it's ultimately we're doing the service for the company. We're doing the service for the audience. Can I spend some time, because I have a background in psychology, can I spend some time looking at kind of like the research of how we learn and put together some type of workshop? And she said, yeah, sure, go for it. So that was the very first presentation that I gave on presentations, and that kind of morphed and evolved over time. And eventually I started my own business helping people make their own presentations. But it came from the fact that like there was just so many bad presentations out there. And there's so many times when I think as a presenter, we don't think about the fact that when we're presenting for a purpose, and it's not for us, right? It's not for us as the presenter to have our speaker's notes. It's there for the audience to learn something or to change something or to buy something or whatever it is that you're presenting. And you're not going
Absolutely.
to get that with a slide full of text.
So it's interesting. Again, I thought I saw it all until I was speaking at a convention, and as you said, this person was an academic and was presenting important research results and findings, but they also were not from the US. So there was a language barrier kind of thing. So now you're adding even more nerves to the fact that you have to present, because also researchers aren't really comfortable presenting oftentimes too. So what she did is she had her PowerPoint, her notes. So it was a screen full of her presentation script that she put on the screen behind her. And to make it even better, she turned around and read from the screen and not her. So she had her back to us, and it was all content of facts and figures and statistics and all that kind of things that after it was over, and she, obviously didn't get the response that I think she had hoped for. I got to know her a little bit over the 3 days that we were there. And I said, let me just help you with your next time you present this. And, showed her where she could put graphics and just pictures. And she had stories that she told us in that outside of the presentation that helped to demonstrate why what she had was better. And I said, you have to tell the stories. You have to tell the stories. And the facts and the figures, they can come back to you later for, but tell the stories to grab them. So that was, one of the experiences that I thought, I thought I saw it all until I didn't.
And that's such a good example of the worst case scenario, right? Because ultimately, if you were to sit down, if you whatever your topic is, if you were to sit down with coffee with someone, if you were to sit down with a friend for coffee and they didn't know exactly what you did, and you were to explain it to them, and they had a different field than you would explain it in some way that was comprehensible. There's probably some stories involved in it, and there wouldn't be slides of facts and figures, right? And so you want to take that same idea and turn that into your presentation versus a script that you're reading with your back turned to the audience. Absolutely, yeah.
I when I'm teaching public speaking, I say, now tell me, how many of you are taking PowerPoint to dinner? How many of you script before you go on a date?
Yes.
Nobody. I mean, and it's just to show the ridiculousness of that idea, but it's true. The best way to learn is whenever we are authentically having a conversation and we're telling the stories. The stories really will stay with us.
Yeah.
They'll make us remember why that solution that you have is going to work because it's worked for somebody else, and you can see yourself maybe in that story.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a ton of research that says that stories are more memorable than facts and figures, but it's easy to rely on the facts and figures because they're solid, right? And the stories feel too mushy sometimes for people
Yeah.
out there in a field. And I would argue that it doesn't matter who you're presenting to. The research shows that we remember stories and we don't remember statistics. So you can incorporate it no matter how you, whatever you're presenting, no matter what you're presenting, the stories are going to resonate. They're basically social proof. So you've seen this, it works for someone else, and then that might work for you. And that's our way of kind of pitching or presenting or being persuasive that can be maybe a little bit less salesy, but it will still make it resonate with the audience.
So there are, we mentioned PowerPoint, there's Prezi, which, I got introduced actually by when I do coaching of middle school kids. They use Prezi quite a lot. So what is the best presentation software that you believe out there right now? Or what's most preferred, I should say?
I would say the software doesn't matter at all, right?
Yes.
I think that's the thing, is that people get so stuck in the tool and they forget about the whole point. So like your example of the person that was presenting at the conference, there's this idea that if I get up there and I say what I need to say, people are going to hear it. But probably 3 minutes into that presentation, every single person in that room had zoned out, was checking their phone, checking their email, going to a different event, whatever it happened to be, like they weren't listening. And so we get stuck in this idea that the tool is going to save your presentation, but that's not what's going to save it. You are going to save it by thinking through, like, what are the main ideas that you're saying? How do I say that in a way that's going to connect with the audience? So if it is a whole bunch of research, how can I tell a story that's going to connect with them? How can I show an example that's going to make it understandable, right? How can I use a metaphor or an analogy or a case study so that's going to connect? Those are the things that are going to work. Now, once you have those, you can put it in any software you want, but it should be a visual solution as opposed to a verbal solution, because you yourself are going to be verbally explaining it, right? So you don't need to have text. I mean, now, don't get me wrong, I'm not anti-text, but there's a ton of research that says that the
Just a
multimedia
little.
effect, dual coding effect, like those are things that work when you have visuals and you're speaking, not when you're reading and you're listening, because you can't read and listen at the same time. So being really selective about what you're including, and it doesn't matter whether you're using a PDF, you're using no slides at all, or you're using Prezi or PowerPoint or Keynote or Google Slides, they all essentially do the same thing, and they can all do it terribly if you do it wrong. And so I'd argue, like, taking a step back, thinking through what you want to talk about, thinking about how you can connect that with the audience, and then taking that and thinking about how you can make it visual before you ever open your slide software. Because if you open the slide software, you're gonna end up putting your notes in the slide, because that's what it triggers you to do. They have templates, right? And the templates are like, what's your title? What's your bullets? Those are your basically your slide notes. But if you go to the bottom of PowerPoint or Google Slides or Keynote, there's a little piece down there. If you pull it up, that's where your notes go. So
That's
anything that you are
exactly
about
right.
to put in the bullets should go down there, and then the slide should be blank. There's always a blank layout. Turn it to the blank layout and think about how you can visually show what you're going to talk about, because that's going to make a much more effective presentation to your audience.
Two things to that. The one of the arguments I would always get for people why they had to put all the data into the slide was, well, I'm going to share these slides with people and they're not going to take notes and they need to have all the things that I said. Well, I said,
Yes.
well, then put it in the notes and
Yeah.
then they'll get the notes and you'll
And
be
save it as a
fine. And
PDF with
don't
the notes
bore us with the
attached.
stuff on the slides.
Yeah.
And then for me too, I said, build a library of photos or take advantage of the AI opportunities that these softwares have and put a picture that demonstrates what you're trying to, that gets the emotion attached to what you're trying to say on that slide, because people will remember, they'll connect that photo and imprint that to the words you're saying
Yeah.
so much better.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So in PowerPoint, you can save your PowerPoint as a PDF with the notes attached to each slide. So if that is something that you're worried about, you don't have to make two handouts. You can just do that, right? That's already there. And then it's serving two purposes, because you wouldn't expect to go to the movies that is like a documentary movie and have like a bunch of text on the slide that you have to read. So why do we expect that in a presentation, right? That's not how people learn. That's not how people are going to remember things. And for the emotional images, yes, absolutely. If you can use emotional images, Standings did this study where he looked at people looking at words, standard images, and then emotional images. And after 100 of them, people could remember 70% of the words. They could remember 97% of the emotional images, which is essentially all of them, right? Like you can remember essentially all the emotional images that you see. And then even crazier is he took the standard images and he took it a step further and showed people 10,000 standard images. So things that you could see like in everyday life. And people could remember two-thirds of them. Could you imagine trying to remember 10,000 random words? Or 10,000 statistics, there's no way, right? You could maybe remember four, but there's no way that you're going to remember 6,600 of them. And so if you can use those images, they tend to be easier for people to recall. And for you yourself, oftentimes I'll get people being like, but I need my notes so that I remember what I'm going to say. And one, the notes tab is, it's paramount, right? Like, use it. You can use it in front of you when you present. But also, the slides will trigger you as to what
Yeah,
you want to say.
absolutely. Absolutely. That's all
Yeah.
you need is, oh, that's the story that I want to talk about.
Yeah.
You know,
That image
if I have
tells
a
you.
picture of my grandfather up there, fishing with me, then that's going to remind me of that story that I tell
Yeah.
about the fishing with my grandfather. That's all
Absolutely.
you need.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even have to be my grandfather. It could be an older man with a boy or a girl fishing, but that will remind you of that story. So, awesome. So, how do you communicate a message that it resonates with our audience and has value and meaning?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing is knowing your audience, right? And I think that's the hardest thing for people to kind of get over, because I feel like when you talk to people about any sort of communication, the biggest thing is that you have to know who you're talking to. You have to know who you're writing the email to. You have to know, like, if you're writing a document or a brochure, like, who's going to be reading that? Because ultimately, if you don't know who your audience is, you're just kind of creating it for yourself, or whoever in your mind is everybody, which is never going to resonate. And so it's about thinking about who is actually going to be sitting in my audience and that I want to connect with. So the conference example is the easiest one, I think, because the conference has a theme, it has a group of people that it's catering towards. And technically, anybody can go to that conference, right? If it's for medical professionals, then anyone can go. They don't have to be a medical professional. Well, but that's your target audience, right? If it's for like pediatrics, it's even more of a niche group. Now, anyone in the medical field could go, anyone in the world could go, but it's still a very specific group. And so if you think about like that's your niche target audience, that's who you're presenting to, because that's who the majority of people in the room are going to be. If you're presenting to leadership, if you're presenting to direct reports, you know them better, so that's a lot easier. If you're presenting to potential customers, hopefully you've done some research and you know them. So like there's but you want to do a little bit of digging and kind of think through, like, who am I presenting to? What do they know? What is their background? What motivates them? What drives them? What excites them? What terrifies them? Because those questions are going to help you shift how you present. And if you don't think through kind of those questions, then you're going to be presenting it for yourself, and yourself is not your target audience. So thinking through kind of, especially the resisting and what excites them, those are really important questions to think through, especially if you're trying to do something that's at all persuasive, because, and most presentations are, right? You're trying to get people
Call
to
to
do
action.
something. That's the whole point, right? You're not presenting just for because you love presentations. You want them to do something with the information that you're giving, and they're not going to do it if you have terrified them or kind of talked about something they thought was really exciting as a problem, but you haven't like gone through the process of converting them to your thought process. So it's really important to kind of think about who's in the audience, and then once you know that, then you think about like, what do they know? So if I'm presenting something that's really technical, then I want to think through what do they know and how can I create this connection between this new technical piece of information and this experience they already have. And then you can create an analogy or a metaphor or a story that relates with that. But that way, you're not just like presenting jargon that they don't understand. And you're actually connecting with something that they're already familiar with.
So 2 points there. First, to the latter thing you just said about the jargon, and this is true for corporate as well as just the academic
Yeah.
audiences. First, you don't have to be the smartest person in the room. And so be sure that you're speaking to your audience in a less formal way. It isn't going to make you seem like you don't know your stuff if you don't say all those big words and terms that maybe half your audience doesn't know. Because just as you said, it could be people that are outside of that field, outside of academia and such. And then the second piece is when you tell your story, and you present the problem, the solution, the pain and all that. So oftentimes people use the word I more than you, they, them, my. So talk to those two points.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The jargon, I understand that if you are an expert in whatever it is that you're presenting on, that you, or even if you're just like familiar, you're in that field, that that becomes the vocabulary that you use. But if you were to go, going back to the idea of taking a friend to coffee and explaining it to them, you wouldn't be using that jargon to explain it to them. And so unless you are positive that every single person in the room knows exactly what you're talking about when you use an acronym or use jargon, don't use it. Or at the very least, define it at the beginning, right? And make sure that you don't have more than a handful of them, because no one's gonna be able to remember those if they didn't know those to be at the beginning. And that's not what you want them to use their working memory for. So a working memory has about four spaces in our brain. And that allows you to remember content or remember things as you're working on it, right? Hence the name. So think about, like, you know, back before we had cell phones that remembered everyone's number, you had to remember other people's number. And that's why phone numbers in the US are divided up into three chunks with 3 to 4 pieces of information within each chunk, because that's about what we can remember. We can remember up to four, roughly, and that's about it. So if you're presenting four new definitions, they have now used their entire working memory remembering those four definitions, and they don't have any space to remember the content that you're going to say. So that's not worth it, right? Like, I would argue that you basically, if that's the case, then you're asking them to remember jargon in your presentation. And that is the point of your presentation. And that should not be the point of anyone's presentation, because that could be an email. So I would say, you know, make it easier. We remember things better when it's easier to understand. So even if everybody in your room understands the jargon, unless it is completely normal for them to use that word instead of another word, it's going to take them more time to process it. And it's going to then take more space in their working memory. So then they're going to be doing that while you're talking about something else. And so then they're missing that something else. And so it's not about, like, what is easiest for me to say, it's about what's easiest for my audience to remember and process.
Yeah.
And doing that flip is going to help you. So yeah, absolutely. I worked at a place where they had alphabet soup, we called it, because it was just, everything was an acronym. And sometimes you would have the same acronyms for completely different things, but it was like, oh, well, this department uses this acronym, this department uses this acronym. And whenever I would do facilitation with them, I would have to, like, ask for a list of acronyms before I started with them, because they would just, like, blurt out random
garbage,
and I had no idea what they were talking about. So yeah, no, absolutely. It's just taking away from your audience's actually processing the important part of your presentation. And that's the key, right? That's what you want people to do. What was the second point that you asked?
The second is, when you do storytelling, make it not about you.
Yes. Yeah. So when I first started my business, I was going to a bunch of workshops and kind of learning about how different aspects of the business, how you should set things up. And one of the things I went to was on setting up your website. Now, my website needs a revision. I'm currently in the process of revamping it. But I remember that when I was in this talk, the person said, your about page is not about you. And that kind of blew my mind at first. But then when you think about it, it's like, yeah, the about page should be the story that makes the audience want to say yes to you, right? Mm-hmm. And that, even though that is about you page, it's not about you. It's about how you can help your audience. And right. So it should be a story about how your audience can see themselves working with you and how you understand their pain points, not how you got necessarily into the field. And so I think that there's this, like, if that's true for an about page that's specifically about you, that's true about every form of communication, right? That's and especially when you're presenting something that, once again, most likely is some sort of persuasiveness. No one's going to be persuaded just because you get up there and evangelize that, like, this is the best solution. They're going to get up there and be persuaded because you're telling them that this is the best solution for them, because you understand their needs, you understand their difficulties. And that's just human nature, right? And they're not going to change just because you say 90% of people do X, Y, and Z. They're going to change because you said Sally does X, Y, and Z, and that helped Sally. Like, that's just unfortunately how the human brain works, that we don't necessarily gravitate towards statistics in the same way that we gravitate towards stories.
Yeah, that's because we say, oh gosh, Sally and I do the same thing. If that helps Sally, I bet you could help me.
And that doesn't mean you can't include the 90% of people do X, Y, and Z, but that's not the only thing to include, right? You can use both, but you shouldn't just be using the statistics.
Yeah, for sure. So early on in this conversation, I talked about the anxiety that you could have whenever you step in front of an audience, whether it's online here, or doing a TikTok or doing any of those things. So how do you combat that anxiety when doing a presentation, a pitch, or whatever?
Remembering the audience is in their underwear, obviously. No, it's terrible advice. I don't really know where that came from, and I don't know why it's so pervasive. But I would say one, there's different forms of anxiety, right? There's I'm nervous, which we sometimes call anxiety, to I'm having panic attacks and not sleeping anxiety. And I would say on either end of that spectrum, there's people that can help you, right? But you want to be very selective about who's helping you depending on where you fall. So if you're having panic attacks, you're throwing up, you're not sleeping, I would highly, highly encourage you to find a psychologist who specializes in anxiety and especially around presentations, because there's a lot of things that can be done to make your life easier. If you're somewhere else on that spectrum, then coaches can oftentimes, and not to say that coaches can't help you on that other end, just that is something that you would probably want a very niche specialty for. Anywhere else on that spectrum, it's about releasing the adrenaline before you do anything else. So oftentimes we hear like self-talk and, thinking about like reframing thoughts in your brain, and all those are great. I'm not discounting those. But from what we've seen with the research is that the first and foremost is your adrenaline. So when you go into a situation where you're nervous or you're anxious, you have all this adrenaline that's building up, and your amygdala in your brain is basically going haywire. And essentially, it's saying like, there's danger. I'm gonna send blood to your extremities so that you have more ability to run away. I'm going to dilate your pupils because that means that you're going to be able to see better. I'm going to have your heart racing and your lungs breathing faster because then that gives you more energy for when you need to move quickly, which is great if you're trying to like outrun a lion. Less great if you're standing in front of a room full of people and trying to be your best self presenting, right? So there's a reason why it happens, and that's why removing the adrenaline as much as possible will help calm down your amygdala. So your amygdala is linked to your five senses. So sometimes people really like visualization exercises, like thinking about whatever your calm place is, so the beach, the forest, whatever it is, and like really thinking through what my five senses are experiencing. So what do you smell, taste, touch, hear, see? And like actually visualize it, because basically what that's done is it's overwriting your amygdala, which is currently trying to like send all the fight or freeze responses, and you're saying, no, you're gonna think about these emotions or these senses instead. Or you can burn off the adrenaline by going for a walk or doing some type of exercise like squats if you don't have room to walk around, and just kind of like burning that off. If you are in the presentation, you obviously can't do any of those because you're supposed to be speaking and being present, then one thing that I think helps the best is taking your toes, squeezing them, and then releasing them, squeezing them, and releasing them, because basically that's still doing the same idea as exercise. You're still burning off that adrenaline, but in a way that's a lot more subtle. The audience can't see it. And as long as you're stationary and you can do that without like falling over, it's a safe way to do it, right? So if this is happening before the presentation and you can calm down your amygdala and you can burn off that adrenaline and you're feeling more calm, then you can add in the self-talk. Then you can work on the reframing and say like, okay, I know I'm worried that I'm going to make mistakes, but really I've been in the audience before, and as an audience member, I'm really just looking for the presenter to succeed. I'm trying to find that nugget that's going to help me. And success is not doing everything perfectly, it's doing it and helping someone, right? So, like, reframing it can be helpful, but if you try and reframe it when you're still feeling nervous and anxious and jittery and you have a lot of adrenaline, it's not going to help. So, it's kind of, there's an order of operations, if you will, and it's about like doing the things in the correct progression. And in the presentation itself, you know, one of the biggest things that I'll say for people, especially online, but this works as well in the room, if you feel like it's taking over and you can't calm down, always have water near you, because you can always take water, take a sip, and while you're pretending to take a sip or actually taking a sip, you're buying yourself a couple seconds to just like do some deep
Calm
breathing,
down.
calm down, squeeze your toes, whatever it is that you need to do, visualize your calm place of the beach or wherever it is, and then reset and come back.
I saw someone once, and I thought it was kind of brilliant where they started their presentation and said, "You know, guys, I want everybody here to be able to just absorb everything I'm saying. And some of you might have had a stressful morning, so we're going to do some deep breathing exercises together." And then really what they're doing is they're calming themselves down too. But the audience then is okay, cool with this, you know, and it does give you some time. So that's a great tip that I saw someone do.
I love that. Yeah. And also, I think the biggest thing is that, like, the audience is on your side, right?
Yes,
Like, I don't think I've ever been
absolutely.
in a presentation where I'm like, I hope this person fails, right? Like,
Yeah,
you've
I
never
know.
done that.
I
Like,
know.
the example of the person in the conference, right? Like, you felt bad for that person and you wanted to help them. And that was like one of the worst presentations you've ever seen. So that is what the audience is feeling for you when you're on stage. If you're not doing as well, like, they're not sitting there being like, oh, this person is terrible, I can't believe I wasted all my time and I hope they fail. Like,
Yeah.
they're hoping you give them some nugget of information that they can take and use it, because that's what they're there for, right? And so as long as you're giving them that, you're succeeding.
Right. And you want them to, especially when they have content that you can see is good and useful and needed, you don't want them never to do this again because it was such a terrible situation. And you know, maybe there was somebody there that might have been hurtful to them about their presentation and did it in a way that wasn't going to make them ever want to do it again. And that was my whole reason for trying to get to know them and have them trust me and see that this is what I do and then take them from a heart rather than, you know, being critical. All right, the final thing that we want to talk about is what do you wish you knew when you started this journey that you're on now?
So many things. I mean, I think that's what I would hope everyone's answer would be, right? Because if it's not, then you haven't been learning enough. But I mean, I would say I could take that in a lot of different directions, right? So first, I think when I first started doing this, I was so terrified that someone was going to stand up and say, why should we listen to you? Because you don't have a PhD in this. And no one cares. You're on stage, right? You're on stage, and therefore you have something to say, and that automatically gives you credibility. And I think when people start a presentation and they want to rattle off like all of their degrees and their experience and their background, you've taken this momentum of the audience being excited about you presenting, and you've kind of squashed it, because you just started with something that they don't really care about. You're already on stage. They already see you as an expert. And whatever you're saying is going to help validify it, or it's going to like bring it down. So, I mean, I think that was something that I was really worried about at the beginning, and no one ever cared. So I think that I think that when I first started doing graphic design, I started with this idea, because I got my graphic design degree from a place that was studio based. So it was BFA. It was very you had to do art classes in addition to the graphic design classes. And everything had to have a reason behind it. Like there had to be a concept behind it. And I think that obviously like the best design does have a concept, right? Just like the best presentation or the best communication, there's a concept behind it. But sometimes the concept can just be getting people excited about something, right? And I think that sometimes we get so stuck in this idea of like perfect and it being like exactly textbooked best practices. And with presentations, with graphic design, nothing, with anything that you do, nothing is ever going to be perfect. Nothing is ever going to be textbook best practice, right? When I start working with clients, I will tell them best practice, this is what we're doing. It never turns out that way. And that's okay, right? I'm not going to lose sleep over it. Their presentation is still going to be good because they got closer to where they would have been without my help. And I think that's kind of that's the goal for everybody, right? Like thinking through, how do I get one step closer with each thing that I'm doing? Because you've now learned something along the way. You can now apply what you've learned and now you can do something else to make it better. And I think it's just, it's really easy to be really hard on yourself at the beginning or at any stage, because that has, we see our work as an extension of ourselves, but your work is not your worth, right? Like there's a complete delineation between those. And you can do terrible work and still have a ton of worth in the world, right? Like there's reasons why things don't go well. Or you could have great work and that could just be a one-off, right? Like it doesn't matter. They're completely separate things. And I think just like reminding yourself that it's okay to make mistakes, it's okay to not have it be perfect, and just take the risk and jump anyways, right? Like do what you can in the best way that you can in the moment and be okay with that.
Yeah. And I know I spent a long time in the corporate world. And as a project manager, I had to often go to these status update meetings where they gave us a template that we were to follow to demonstrate our status update. And in their minds, it was to keep everybody on time. You have these slides, everybody says the same thing, everybody easy to follow kind of thing. But you wanted to poke your eyes out after about 15 minutes of these boring, terrible slides. And so whenever I was not in that situation, my slides were the way that, you know, I teach slides to be now. But if you're out there in your corporate and you are doing these templates, please keep that in mind, that if you're going to give them a template, give them a template that will be engaging and interesting and not one that will bore them out of your audience out of their mind.
And I'd argue, you know, the reason why people like templates is because they want to your point, they want to keep everyone in line, right? But that also means that this is, you only have a very, very small room to move in that line. You can't be creative. You can't be great. You can't be exciting. Like, yeah, it also keeps people from being hypothetically bad, but like that doesn't help, because when you see slide after slide of the same thing, everybody's going to zone out. And those status update meetings, they don't need to be meetings. They can easily be emails, unless you're meeting to discuss like, this is where I'm at and I need help, or can you brainstorm with me and help me figure something out? There's no reason to have those be meetings. And that's one thing in corporate, is that there's way too many meetings. Give your team members back time. Like I realize that as a manager, you have no time, and that it's, time is a valuable commodity. But if you have 10 people in the meeting and it's an hour long meeting, and you're there, that's 11 hours that you just spent on something that could have been a single hour for you reading through their emails. I realize for you, it's easier, but you could have just given 10 hours back to your entire team to do work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we always want people to be innovative and creative, and we don't understand why they're not. And just think about it for a few minutes, why they're not. All right. Well, it is time now for me to share my slides. So if you've enjoyed this conversation with Danielle as much as I have, you definitely want to get her contact information. So if you're watching, of course, you can get a screenshot. If you're listening, you will be able to write down this information. If you can go quickly grab a paper or pencil, I will have all this information, as always, on my YouTube channel, which is Vicki Nethling, please subscribe, or my findyourleadershipconfidence.com. But here it is now for those that are enjoying watching this. And for you, the listening, the website is makeitmemorable.studio. Makeitmemorable.studio. On LinkedIn, it is her name, Danielle Hennes. That's DanielleHennis. Danielle Hennes. TikTok is at Dr. Hennis. And I'm going to turn it over to Danielle so that she can tell you what you'll find whenever you are going to LinkedIn, or what you'll find on that makeitmemorable.studio website. Danielle?
Thanks, Vicki. Yeah, so I post on LinkedIn a ton of content on how to present better, how to use PowerPoint more effectively, how to use design, general like business communication things that I find interesting and relevant. I'm always reading a ton of books. So a lot of times I'll post book reviews and things that are relevant in the business setting. And I also have an email newsletter where I go into more depth if you are interested. It's on that website. And I occasionally will do 5-week workshops, like I'm having one in March, so that will be recurring throughout the year. So if you go to the website, it'll give you the date of the next one.
Awesome. Thank you, Danielle, so much for being a great guest. I enjoyed so much having a conversation with you about a subject that I think everybody needs to become more aware of, how to have more engaging and interesting presentations.
Yeah, thank you, Vicki. It's been
and
lovely.
As always, I remind everyone, life is a journey, and it's up to you to enjoy the ride. This is Vicki Nethling, signing off.
Thank you for tuning into the Find Your Leadership Confidence Podcast with Vicki Nethling, where we share impactful lessons that help you grow as an individual, grow your confidence, and find the positive and good within you so you powerfully and authentically become the best version of yourself. Remember to visit our website at www.findyourleadershipconfidence.com and enjoy even more great episodes like this one. Again, while you're here, subscribe to us via your favorite network. We look forward to seeing you next time on the Find Your Leadership Confidence Podcast.